layoffs are announced at Cirrus Design. Machinists vote to strike against Boeing. And Midwest Airlines sheds staff but says it will survive. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, September 5th, 2008. It just got a lot harder to ignore the downswing in piston aircraft sales. The manufacturer of the world's top-selling piston single is chopping 8% of its workforce. Cirrus Design co-founder and vice chairman Dale Klapmeyer told BusinessNorth.com sales have been up and down this year, but extremely poor in August. Cirrus says it has cut 102 positions, including 25 voluntary separations, as it scales back overhead to match declining sales. The company adds it hopes for a rebound by the end of the year as buyers respond to tax incentives in the federal economic stimulus bill passed in January. President and Chief Operating Officer Brent Wouters shared the specifics with Aero News. The cuts include 73 jobs at the company's headquarters in Duluth and another 29 at its composites production facility in Grand Forks, Minnesota. Quote, Cirrus has to be more flexible as a business to demand fluctuations. We need to tighten up efficiencies, unquote. ANN Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell will talk further with Brent Wouters in today's Aero News special feature. By an overwhelming majority, employees represented by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers have rejected what Boeing called its best and final contract offer. They voted Wednesday to strike immediately. But union leaders told workers to stay on the job 48 hours longer while they meet with Boeing reps one more time. The new deadline is just past midnight tonight. Doug Kite, Boeing's VP of Human Resources and lead negotiator, said in a statement Thursday morning, quote, "We offered employees the best package of pay and benefits in the aerospace industry," unquote. He added the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service asked both sides to meet at a neutral location immediately. A walkout would mark the fourth IAM strike against Boeing in 20 years. Analysts say a strike would cost Boeing about $100 million a day in lost revenue, as unfinished planes sit idle on production lines and customer deliveries grind to a halt. If the strike lasts more than a few weeks, the effects will also ripple up Boeing's supply chain. Midwest Airlines reports significant progress in its ongoing quest to remain in business. The Milwaukee-based airline said Wednesday it has secured $60 million in additional financing, including commitments from TPG Capital and Republic Airways Holdings, an airline holding company based in Indianapolis. Midwest Chairman and CEO Tim Huxema said $40 million has already been funded, with an additional $20 million committed contingent on completion of certain milestones in the airline's voluntary restructuring plan. He added that Northwest Airlines will continue its code share and frequent flyer programs with Midwest. As part of the financing agreement, Republic has also entered into an agreement with Midwest to operate 12 Embraer 170 jets under the Midwest Connect brand, replacing mainline aircraft. Midwest also announced on Wednesday it plans to return 16 of 25 Boeing 717-200s that it now operates by the end of this year. The airline had previously announced the retirement of its oldest MD-80s by the end of this year. The net result of all the changes will be a mainline fleet consisting of just 9 717s, requiring the company to make more furloughs. Huxema commented, quote, "Operating a more fuel-efficient, flexible mix of aircraft makes good economic sense. We've had to make difficult decisions as part of this restructuring that have resulted in change for our airline," unquote. He added that flight crews and maintenance staff will experience what he termed additional temporary furloughs and asked unions to come to the table with cost savings. The Airline Pilots Association responded by calling the announcement catastrophic. Captain Jay Schnittorf, chairman of the Midwest Airlines unit of ALPA, says the plan will have, quote, "a devastating impact, raising the number of Midwest pilots who are out of work to approximately 300 of the some 400 pilots who were employed before TPG and NWA purchased the airline earlier this year," unquote. British investigators now say they're reasonably certain ice crystals blocked fuel lines on a British Airways airliner that landed short of the runway at London's Heathrow Airport in January. As ANN reported, the Boeing 777 was on an extended final to land at Heathrow January 17th when the autopilot commanded the engines to spool up. Both engines responded initially, but thrust then dialed back to just above flight idle, first in the right engine, then the left. The plane's flight crew was later hailed for bringing the plane down safely, short of the threshold to runway 27 left. Only relatively minor injuries were reported to some of the plane's 136 passengers and 16 crew. The flight had passed through extremely cold air over Siberia. The Air Accidents Investigation Branch says it suspects a larger-than-normal amount of water contained in the fuel froze, and ice crystals blocked the fuel lines during descent. The board has recommended all 777 operators periodically increase engine thrust levels at high altitude to reduce the chances of excessive ice formation in fuel systems. The U.S. National Transportation Safety Board assisted in the investigation. Up next on ANN, medevac services accentuate the positive. EAA redefines its role at another regional fly-in. And a 12-year wrongful death court fight ends in Chicago. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for September 5th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. The Association of Air Medical Services is responding to a rash of recent air ambulance accidents by stressing that medevac helicopters and airplanes are vital for saving lives, particularly during times of national crisis. AAMS points out that air medical services participating in the evacuation of hospitals and other medical facilities before the arrival of Hurricane Gustav transported more than 150 patients using more than 60 helicopters and airplanes, and are now returning many of those patients to Gulf Coast cities. Air medical providers performed numerous helicopter transports of ICU and emergency department patients, including transports by pediatric neonatal specialty teams to move children and infants born prematurely. As communities and infrastructures return to normal, air medical providers and their ground EMS colleagues are now bringing them home. Now, air medical services are preparing for the probable landfall of Hurricanes Hannah and Ike. The Experimental Aircraft Association announced on Thursday it has signed an agreement with the Mideastern Regional Fly-In, or MRFI for short, promoting higher visibility for the event and a more clearly defined role for EAA. EAA will provide extensive promotion and coverage of MRFI and sponsor forums and workshops, among other considerations. The agreement, which parallels recent understandings with other regional fly-ins, follows a July 1999 takeoff accident at the Arlington, Washington fly-in. The NTSB determined the crash was caused by a departure stall, clearly a pilot error in which neither Arlington nor the EAA had any responsibility. But that didn't stop the courts from awarding plaintiffs a $10.5 million judgment, the bulk of it levied against EAA. So now the regionals are held at arm's length and required to get independent event insurance. The new agreement comes just in time for this year's MRFI, which is tomorrow and Sunday at Grimes Field in Urbana, near both Columbus and Dayton, Ohio. The participants have finally tired of a marathon lawsuit in Chicago, which started more than a decade ago. The Chicago Tribune reports it all started October 30, 1996, when four people died in the fiery crash of a twin-engine Gulfstream IV jet, following a botched takeoff from what is now known as Chicago Executive Airport. The pilot, 53-year-old Martin Coppi, 54-year-old Aon Risk Services CEO Arthur Quern, 33-year-old flight attendant Christine Anderson, and 50-year-old co-pilot Robert Hampton Whitener were leaving on a two-day round trip to Burbank, California. The NTSB ruled that Coppi failed to maintain control in gusty crosswinds and didn't abort the takeoff in time, and that Whitener failed to adequately monitor and or take sufficient remedial action. The jet's landing gear hit a ditch, the plane began shedding parts, and then it slid and burned just beyond the airport's north fence. The plane was owned by cosmetics giant Alberto Culver, which had a cooperative agreement with Aon Risk Services to share each other's aircraft when needed. The NTSB said the two companies did a poor job of addressing takeoff procedural differences between their aircraft. The airport got some blame for the ditch, which, by the way, is no longer there. The families of all four victims got lawyers and reached settlements or won jury verdicts in lawsuits against the companies, and against the airport, which is co-owned by Wheeling and Prospect Heights. In order to end the legal battle royale, the airport's insurance company agreed to pay $6 million to cover a portion of the loss of the jet, which was valued at over $27 million. Wednesday's settlement guarantees the crash can spawn no more lawsuits. Chicago Executive Airport Manager Dennis Rouleau said the settlement would have no financial impact on the airport. Quote, "I feel badly for the loss of life. It was an unfortunate accident. I'm just glad finally it's over." NASA is rolling the dice. On Thursday, the shuttle Atlantis was moved from the Vehicle Assembly Building at the Kennedy Space Center to the launch pad for its trip next month to the Hubble Space Telescope. The Associated Press reports Atlantis is scheduled for liftoff on NASA's final visit to Hubble October 8th, but is expected to be delayed a couple of days because of work lost to tropical storms Fay and Hanna. An additional delay resulted from a problem in the hookup between the shuttle and its external fuel tank. Fay's tremendous rain bands 2 weeks ago shut down KSC for 3 days. Hanna is now expected to remain far enough offshore to pose little threat. But it's too early for reliable forecasts on the paths of Hurricane Ike and Tropical Storm Josephine. NASA, which is behind schedule in the shuttle program, is betting both storms will pose no threat. 7 astronauts will fly to Hubble to install new equipment that mission managers hope will prolong the telescope's working life and produce better imaging. Unlike missions to the International Space Station, astronauts on missions to Hubble have no lifeboat if something happens to their craft during launch. So NASA will not let Atlantis lift off until a second shuttle is on the pad ready to go. The Endeavour is being prepared for that role. Still ahead, a crash into a rock quarry with no serious injuries. San Francisco welcomes the Blue Angels. And Carl Sagan is honored with NASA fellowships. You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design. Maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, September 5th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. A single-engine Sadler Vampire made a forced landing in a rock quarry in Findlay, Ohio on Wednesday after reportedly losing power. The plane was destroyed in a post-crash fire, but we're happy to say the 24-year-old pilot walked away with minor injuries. The Findlay Courier reports 24-year-old Barack Mowry, described as a licensed pilot and instructor, told local police he was on a test flight and lost power after departing the Findlay Airport. When he realized he was over a residential area, he recalled maneuvering toward the Tarbox McCall Quarry, owned by National Lime and Stone. The pit is no longer producing, but is used as a dump for masonry materials. Mowry managed to avoid the water-filled portion of the quarry and even put the plane down in an elevated spot, but it slid over the edge and dropped about 50 feet before coming to a stop on a flat, dry area. Utility worker James Stewart was on his way to a call when he says he saw the plane in trouble. Quote, "We saw it go over and it was dropping pretty fast. I knew it was in a tough spot," unquote. Stewart says he climbed over an 8-foot fence separating the parking lot of a tire plant from the quarry, then scrambled down to where the plane had stopped bouncing. Quote, "He was just getting out when I got there. I walked him back to a rocky area, and by that time it was on fire," unquote. After another witness used a mobile phone to call 911 at 12:56 p.m. Wednesday, there was apparently some confusion as to which quarry was the scene of the accident. When they got there a short time later, firefighters had to rappel down to the plane with handheld fire extinguishers to put out the blaze. Findlay Police Chief Bill Spraw told the Toledo Blade the aircraft is a total loss. The FAA was reportedly on scene yesterday to investigate. Findlay Airport Manager Robert Johnston told the Blade that Mowry had mentioned an engine heat problem shortly before the accident and said he'd be testing but did not expect to fly. Airport personnel later heard Maori's radio call departing on runway 7, followed by sightings of black smoke. The Sadler Vampire has one of the most interesting pedigrees of any small aircraft. In 1982, Bill Sadler won the Grand Champion Ultralight Award at Oshkosh with the mid-wing twin tailboom pusher aircraft. After about 30 of them were built in the U.S., and the design was licensed briefly to an Australian firm, further commercial success proved elusive. In the 1990s, the plane was reincarnated as the Piranha, an attack and surveillance plane for the Turkish military. The Piranha was a vampire with a reinforced airframe, retractable gear, a 450-horsepower engine, a 30-millimeter cannon, and mounts for up to a half ton of rockets or small bombs. The Turks discontinued the program. At EAA AirVenture 2007, Sadler brought the design back as the Vampire LSA, with fixed landing gear, a longer folding wing, and Rotax 912 power. By Lakeland this year, Sadler had fitted the plane with a twin-rotor Rotomax Wankel engine. The accident aircraft on Wednesday featured a Rotomax power plant, but it's not clear in what configuration. Rotomax recently settled on an Australian-sourced propeller speed reduction unit as standard equipment, but the Vampire parked at the engine maker's AirVenture booth this year sported a small-diameter propeller configured for direct drive with no gearbox. As of late yesterday, Rotomax had declined comment on the incident. In San Francisco, Fleet Week organizers announced this week the U.S. Navy Blue Angels will return for the event's 28th year, October 9th through the 14th. The celebration is expected to attract 1 million spectators along the San Francisco waterfront. Also appearing this year will be the Canadian Snowbirds, the F-16 Viper West, and Patriot Jet demonstration teams, U.S. Air Force F-22A Raptor and A-10, a U.S. Coast Guard helicopter, and several civilian aerobatic performers. A variety of family-oriented events will be staged along the waterfront. Aquatic Park Fisherman's Wharf and Pier 39 will also have events and viewing areas this year. NASA announced on Wednesday the new Carl Sagan Postdoctoral Fellowships in Exoplanet Exploration, created to inspire the next generation of explorers seeking to learn more about planets and possibly life around other stars. There are now more than 300 known planets beyond our solar system, called exoplanets. The late Carl Sagan imagined such worlds and pioneered the scientific pursuit of life that might exist on them. Sagan was an astronomer and highly successful science communicator. NASA's new Sagan Fellowships will award stipends of about $60,000 a year for a period of up to 3 years to selected postdoctoral scientists. Topics can range from techniques for detecting the glow of a dim planet and the blinding glare of its host star to searching for the crucial ingredients of life in other planetary systems. A call for Sagan Fellowship proposals went out to the scientific community earlier this week, with selections to be announced in February of 2009. And finally, New Zealand's Civil Aviation Authority has figured out the cause of a major episode of deja vu. Rescuers responded this week after a helicopter pilot looked down and saw a Cessna on the ground. He described it as being, quote, pretty smashed up, unquote. When the rescuers got there, though, it looked strangely similar to a wreck they had found the previous week. It turns out there's a reason for that. New Zealand's Rotorua Daily Post reports that in the first accident, on August 26th, the pilot was hailed as a hero for his emergency landing in a paddock in Ngākaru. The plane tore through a fence after engine trouble during a sightseeing flight, damaging its nose, but the pilot and 6 Spanish tourists were uninjured. A helicopter was called in to move the plane to Hamilton for further investigation by the CAA, but that helicopter reportedly experienced hydraulic problems and had to drop the wreckage off at the foot of Hora Hora Bluff. Well, you guessed it, the pilot of the helicopter who called in the report this week had spotted last week's wreck in this week's new spot. Well, the deja vu question's been solved, but one other question remains. Is it really this tough for a Kiwi to get proper aircraft maintenance? That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, ANN's Jim Campbell gets answers to questions about the workforce cuts announced at Cirrus Design yesterday from company president and chief operating officer Brent Wouters. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.